Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're going to talk about Ogden today, specifically 25th Street. A book, 25th Street Confidential by Val Hawley. The subtitle is Drama, Decadence, and Dissipation Along Ogden's Rowdiest Road. And this is emblematic, Val Hawley says, of larger themes in Utah and U.S. history. Generations of Ogdenites have grown up absorbing 25th Street's legends of corruption, menace, and depravity. The rest of Utah has tended to judge Ogden by that street's gaudy reputation. In his new book, 25th Street Confidential, Val Hawley traces Ogden's transformation from quiet hamlet to chaotic railroad junction as waves of non-Mormon fortune seekers swelled the city's population. And the city's outsized role in Ogden annals illuminates larger themes in Utah and U.S. history. Most specifically, 25th Street was a crucible of Mormon-Gentile conflict. Val Hawley tells us the street was targeted in statewide progressive-era reform efforts, and during Prohibition, it would come to epitomize the futility of liquor abatement programs. And he spotlights larger-than-life figures like Mayor Harmon Ward Perry, Belle London, the most successful madam in Utah history, and Rosetta Ducini-Davy, a fascinating figure. Val Hawley is a native of Weber County, attended Weber State College, received a degree in journalism from BYU, a doctorate, a law degree from University of Utah, and a master in library science from Catholic University of America. And he's been a law librarian for several decades and independent historian in Washington, D.C. He's the author as well of James Dean, the biography, and Mike Connolly and the Manly Art of Hollywood Gossip. Val Hawley, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
So growing up in Weber County, inevitably you would have heard stories of 25th Street. What sorts of stories did you hear?
Oh, dear. It was so long disparaged as a disgrace and a gambling hell. In 1911, the reverend of Ogden's First Methodist Church called it one of the most disgraceful gateways to a city on the continent. Even up in Logan, where you folks' radio program is, Ogden's reputation from 25th Street was just terrible. We had a former city councilwoman in Ogden named Doreen Jeske. She tells us that in sixth grade in Logan, her teacher said, if you went down to 25th Street, you took your life in your hands if you dared to visit.
You quote Tom Owens, this is in the preface, I think, overseas in the Army, people would learn he's from Ogden, and they start telling him 25th Street stories.
Oh, yes. A lot of those fellows had been on 25th Street in World War II, whether just passing through on troop trains or whether having been stationed at one of the military installations nearby, such as Hillfield, or Ogden Ordnance in Sunset, or the Ogden Quartermaster Depot, which is now the which became the Utah General Depot. Lots of soldiers came through and experienced 25th Street's wild, chaotic craziness.
Now, as something becomes legendary, it's hard to pick out the fact from the fiction. You treat this in your preface. In fact, you quote Richard Seltzer. He's a chronicler of the old Hell's Half Acre district in Fort Worth, Texas. He says, what is known today is about two-thirds myth. Problem with getting to the historical roots is that the historical viewpoint languishes while the mythology is self-perpetuating. That's certainly true, isn't it?
It is. In Ogden, there are so many stories about Ogden. The best about which I can say is that there's never been any evidence produced to support them. For example, that Al Capone was hiding out from the law in Chicago in Ogden during the Depression.
There's another one that you kind of wish it was true. Kate Flint.
Oh, Kate Flint. Yes, a very famous madam in early Utah railroad era history in Utah. She operated her bordellos in Corinn and Salt Lake, but there was never any evidence that she operated in Ogden. So for her to have purchased, the rumor is that she purchased Brigham Young's carriage at auction, and then, as sort of a thumb in the eye to the Mormon population of Utah, drove it through the streets of Ogden. There's no evidence that she purchased the carriage. It was a joke in the Salt Lake Tribune.
And there's a Fanny Dawson, who's supposed to have been a serial killer.
Oh, yes. I'm not quite sure how that story got started, because the record shows that Fanny Dawson was never tried for a murder. the most serious thing she ever was charged with was operating a boarding house without a license.
Your first chapter is titled Ogden Envy. I want to ask you why that. Here's a quote and epigraph before you start the chapter. This is a quote from the Salt Lake Tribune. Ogden has one advantage, comparing Ogden to Salt Lake City. Its people are wickeder than ours, and the wicked people, as a rule, are different from those who get all their punishment in this world.
The source of the great envy that Salt Lake had for Ogden in the 19th century was the railroad. Brigham Young desperately wanted the Union Pacific Railroad to be routed through Salt Lake City. But because the topography to do that was far more prohibitive, the Union Pacific routed the railroad through Ogden and around the north side of the Great Salt Lake. That was really the source of all of the envy that Salt Lake had harbored for Ogden. All the financial benefit from the railroad came into Ogden and not Salt Lake.
And until the railroad came, you write that Ogden was just sort of a sleepy, typical Mormon outpost.
That's correct. It was just considered a sleepy town on the stage road into Idaho and Montana. But once the railroad got there, construction began, and travelers came through, and their expectations of hospitality needed to be catered to. So you had hotel men and other people who wanted to make money off this phenomenon of people who, when they traveled across the United States, had no choice but to transfer from the Union Pacific to the Central Pacific there at the railroad junction in Ogden. So you had people stampeding to Ogden to make money by catering to these expectations, which were somewhat different from those of Mormon culture. So there was a culture clash from the beginning after the railroad arrived.
I guess it was inevitable. Was it inevitable that you'd have a street like 25th Street spring up at a major railroad junction like this?
I think it is inevitable. I think any town that is a transportation hub has this. One fellow wrote, maybe they call it Larimer, which of course is a famous Denver Tenderloin Street, Larimer or Mission, but every western town that ever amounted to anything has a 25th Street. It usually staggers up the hill from the depot or the riverboat landing, and it is always a legitimate street, business-wise.
Yeah, so the you'd have a lot of merchants there, and you'd just have a lot of people traveling through, and so it'd be probably, you'd have the same character, I suppose, in any western town.
Yes, there was a fellow named Paul Kinsey, who was director of field studies for the American Social Hygiene Association, and therefore an expert in prostitution all around the country. He wrote, the railroads that run into Ogden, no, that's not the right quote. The location of some city seems to make it easier for men to become customers of prostitutes. Up to the early 1940s, Ogden, Utah was a popular locale for prostitution because it was a rail junction. Men could visit a brothel between trains and indeed might plan their travel to permit a layover in Ogden. Some natives would enjoy driving their cars to Ogden's 25th Street on Saturday nights to watch the prostitutes and their clients.
But very colorful. We'll get into some of the larger-than-life figures and the history. I don't know. We have no word. Brigham Young perhaps may have regretted the railroad coming to Salt Lake if that had happened.
Now this is interesting. Salt Lake had as much, if not more, gambling, prostitution, and illegal liquor.
Really? It doesn't have that.
So
reputation.
I don't know. I don't know that particularly bothered Brigham Young. I think he was able to deal with it.
So it had every bit as much, but of course the reputation of the two towns is very different.
Yes, it is. I think the real reason that Ogden got far more mileage out of 25th Street, which was its Tenderloin district, is that you had a combination of politics and economics and cultural clashes going on there. In 1889, Ogden was the first major city in Utah to have its government pass from the hands of the People's Party, which was the Mormon Party, to the Liberal Party, which was the non-Mormon Party. And that didn't sit well with the People's Party at all. They started to cause a lot of disturbance and make a lot of accusations that the Liberal Party was relaxing the enforcement of vice laws there along the street. So you had this, you had the the Mormon Party, which was rather beleaguered, fighting to maintain control of the town, but you also had the economic lifeblood of the town, which was the railroad, leveling the playing field, and that was a unique situation. It didn't exist in any other city.
So this
that is probably why 25th Street got the mileage out of its bad reputation that it did.
Were there promoters? Imagine if you're a merchant on 25th Street, you don't mind its reputation as long as people keep coming.
That's another thing that has sort of been lost to history. The majority of the storefronts on 25th Street were legitimate businesses, whether butchers or milliners or grocers and the like.
I wonder if you could expand on this this Mormon-Gentile conflict. You say that this was a real touch point, this election, the first city to transfer over, and I imagine that conflict went on.
Yes, it did. The first Gentile mayor there was Fred Kiesel, and he took office pledging to conduct city business without partisanship or discrimination. But in spite of that statement, one of the liberal city government's first actions was to pass an ordinance setting aside the city block, which for decades had been home to the Mormon Tabernacle, for use as a public square. The council believed that the church had never secured proper legal title to the Tabernacle Square. And because of that, they started allowing circuses to come and pitch their tents on Tabernacle Square and other public things, public events, which probably were not in keeping with the spirit of the Tabernacle and its activities there. That, of course, probably really stirred up the People's Party more than the than losing the election had. And so at that point, the Deseret News and other People's Party voices started accusing the liberal city government of not enforcing the vice laws.
We're talking with Val Hawley. He has written a new book called 25th Street Confidential, Drama, Decadence, and Dissipation Along Ogden's Rowdiest Road. Val Hawley says, we've been talking about this, that the street's outsized role in Ogden and also illuminates larger themes in Utah and U.S. history. One of those large themes is the crucible of Mormon-Gentile conflict. By the way, this book has been published by University of Utah Press. It's out and available now. We are going to take a brief break. When we come back, I'll have Val Hawley tell me a few stories. Belle London, the most successful madam in Utah history. Rosetta Ducini-Davey, heiress to London's legacy, became a celebrity on the street, in the courts, and in the press. Mayor Harmon Ward Peary, who filled the city treasury with fees and fines from these vicious establishments. And we'll ask Val Hawley, these legends of corruption, menace, and depravity, which of these were true? And then, of course, we'll go to present day. Present day Ogden has embraced 25th Street's reputation and history, as many Western towns have done on these sorts of streets, and has successfully promoted it to tourists. We'll ask what that means. More with Val Hawley following the break.
Today's Access Utah episode was first broadcast in 2013.
You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking about Ogden. Ogden's history, Ogden's reputation, specifically 25th Street. The book is 25th Street Confidential, Drama, Decadence, and Dissipation Along Ogden's Rowdiest Road. If you grew up in the Ogden area, you can't help but have heard stories of 25th Street. And this has tainted, you could say, or enhanced Ogden's reputation for the rest of Utah and, in fact, around the world. And there's some larger-than-life figures we'll get to talking about. Mayor Harmon Ward Peary, Belle London, Rosetta Ducini-Davey, and others. And some more of this history. Val Hawley is the author. The book is out from University of Utah Press. On our Utah Public Radio Facebook page, this is what Dallin Phillips writes. I can remember my dad telling me when I was little that it was the most dangerous street in the world. I'm going to be sure to listen. So thanks for listening, Dallin. Val Holly, the most dangerous street in the world. I guess a lot of parents did warn their kids not to go to 25th Street.
It's true. Even throughout the state, in cities like Logan and Salt Lake, parents were telling their kids that decent people just simply didn't go there.
So even as far away as Logan or other areas?
That's true. That's true. It was known all around the state.
Let me ask you, so that we have legends of corruption, menace, depravity. I imagine to some extent those are true. But tell me how corrupt, how depraved?
Well, during Prohibition, you can imagine that officially liquor was outlawed along the street. And yet, ironically, it was easier to get a drink in Ogden during Prohibition than any other time in its history. And you don't need to take my word for that. There was an Ogden man named Ray Olson who became manager of the Utah League for Prohibition Repeal. That was in 1933. He said there are more saloons today in Ogden than there were in 1917. The sale and distribution of liquor in Ogden is freer today than at any time during the city's history. It was quite interesting to look into this. There had been rumors all along that during Prohibition, the police looked away. They accepted money not to arrest keepers of, not, I shouldn't say saloons, they called them soft drink parlors, not to arrest soft drink parlor proprietors for selling liquor. Not just local police, but the federal agents as well. So it was interesting, finally, to find some confirmation of this. There was a lady in Ogden during Prohibition named Clara Molman, who was the wife of an Ogden City police officer, and her diary was recently discovered in a thrift shop. Now, Deputy Molman was often the star witness in prosecutions of people accused of illegally selling or manufacturing liquor. He would conduct a lot of the raids. But in Mrs. Molman's diary, we learn that that he was often getting calls from bootleggers. And as she put it, they'd call every payday to request a quiet little talk in the parlor with closed doors and drawn blinds. Ooh la la, piling up. And she'd say he'd come back from these meetings. He would roll in at 3 a.m. tied up proper. So it was quite interesting to find this primary source on a deputy sheriff who accepted bribery money to look the other way. He was also the largest man in the Weber County Sheriff's Department. And when the bulk of confiscated whiskey stills became so great that it was unmanageable, they handed him a sledgehammer and told him to smash them to pieces, which he did. So that was his public reputation. But from the recently discovered diary, we learn that he wasn't quite so upright.
Interesting. This is how history comes to light a lot of times, to find a journal in a thrift shop.
Mm-hmm. Now, that was the fate of whiskey steals, but what was the fate of confiscated whiskey? Bernard DeVoto, who is Utah's and Ogden's most famous native writer, who was the first Pulitzer Prize winner from Ogden, wrote a memoir of Ogden during the Prohibition years that was never published until last year, also by the University of Utah Press. DeVoto revealed that the police would regularly deliver large quantities of confiscated whiskey to the local American Legion post. And, in fact, he said that the officers of the American Legion post, of which he was one, strategically put in place members of the police force in the organization of the American Legion. So they had an inside track to the police. And every time there was some liquor confiscated, it generally showed up at the American Legion.
At the American Legion?
Yes.
And that's from Bernard DeVoto. I'm trying to wrap my mind around that. Famous writer. I'd forgotten he was from Ogden. Here's a comment from Shalane in Logan. She wrote to upraxis@gmail.com, upraxis@gmail.com. You can as well. Val Holly is with us for the hour. And his book is 25th Street Confidential, Drama, Decadence, and Dissipation Along Ogden's Rowdiest Road. Here's Shalane's comment. She says, I love 25th Street. I go there almost on a weekly basis, and I enjoy shopping in restaurants. A couple of months ago, I went to a restaurant that Al Capone used to frequent. There's a room in the back where he hung out and played cards with his buddies. I heard that Al Capone considered Ogden's 25th Street too rough. Has your guest heard any stories about Al Capone's visits to 25th Street?
You know, they abound in Ogden, but I haven't been able to find a shred of evidence that it actually happened. I rather think that that goes along the lines of what you were saying at the very beginning of the program about the mythology being self-perpetuating.
So that'll be disappointing for people to, to hear you haven't been able to find any evidence on that.
That's correct. I'm afraid I haven't. The funny thing is that in claiming that, Ogden has to get in line with many other cities in the United States, Aguilar, Colorado, Johnson City, Tennessee. They all claim to have had Al Capone hiding out there in Prohibition.
I guess what it goes to is the dangerous reputation of the street. If quote-unquote Al Capone finds it too dangerous, then it must be dangerous.
Exactly.
We'd love to get your comments, so keep them coming. upraxis@gmail.com, upraxis@gmail.com on our Utah Public Radio Facebook page. Find our post. We have a picture of 25th Street there, and you can comment, as Dallin Phillips did. I'd love to get your experiences on 25th Street. The other part of Shalane's comment takes us to today. 25th Street has been revitalized, and Ogden has done a good job there.
Yes, that happened, that began in the 1970s, when a young architect with the Utah Historical Society named Alan Roberts was driving to Ogden to help create another historical district. He said that he was driving on Washington Boulevard, and somehow 25th Street caught his eye. He'd never been on it before. He made a left turn on it, and by the time he drove the three blocks from Washington Boulevard to Wall Avenue, where Union Station is, he had counted over 40 intact Victorian-era commercial buildings. And he was simply amazed. He contacted the mayor and city council, asked to be put on their agenda, and said, you need to preserve this. And the photos, many of which are reproduced in the book, 25th Street Confidential, show a degree of dilapidation that is just horrifying. The buildings, it's a miracle that any of them survived. I imagine that they did by hiding in plain sight, because 25th Street was not desirable, and no one got the idea that they wanted to come in and bulldoze them and replace them. But city, state, and federal money was made available. And one by one, people, community-minded people, started restoring them and made it into quite a fancy boutique area now. The memory, the afterglow of all the decadence of years past is still there, and so people find it rather intriguing to come down, but they can find fine dining, live theater, mixed-use apartment dwelling, antique shops, and, of course, the Union Station there is at the end of the street at Wall Avenue, and that now is the Utah State Railroad Museum.
Yeah, it's quite a place. And you talk about that afterglow. It's kind of ironic, isn't it?
Yes. Now Ogden unabashedly promotes the afterglow of 25th Street's decadence in outreach to tourists. During the Winter Olympics, they had a budget to put a lot of plaques and kiosks along 25th Street, describing the past, the businesses and the activities of the past. You know, from the legitimate storefronts all the way to the houses of ill fame and gambling dens.
Let's bring in Joshua, who's calling us. He's from Ogden, but now living in St. George. Did I get that right, Joshua?
Yes, sir.
Well, glad you called. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Well, I just have a funny little story that my dad tells. His uncle was a delivery man for the Model Laundry. And when he would go on vacation, when my dad was a boy, 16 or 17 years old, he'd get to do his uncle's delivery route. So he tells this story about delivering sheets to brothels on 25th Street. And he said that he went into the the brothel, and the madam invited him in, and he sat down to have a cup of tea and talk with the ladies. And while he was there, a police officer came in to check on things, and the police officer happened to be the older brother of one of my father's friends. And so before my dad got home, the officer had called his mother, who had called my grandmother, and my dad never got to deliver laundry again.
Thanks for sharing that, Joshua.
You know, I've heard many stories like that in talking to men who are older now. In those days, much of the business in Ogden involved delivering products to brothels along 25th Street. More often, I would hear stories of delivering soda pop there. But in all cases, the young men, who were really only teenagers, would work very hard to carry heavy cases of soda pop up the stairs to these establishments. And the ladies loved them. It seemed to be platonic and all above board, but they would take some of these young men under their wing and pamper and compliment them while they were there and tip them.
Interesting. We have this comment from Sarah Elliott Langsdon on our Facebook page. You can post there as well, Utah Public Radio Facebook. Look for the black and white photo of 25th Street. She says, my favorite story about 25th Street has to be Rose Davey driving around in her pink Cadillac with her ocelot.
Oh, yes. Rose Davey was the most famous madam of 25th Street during the 20th century. She operated the Rose Rooms, which were at the corner of 25th and Lincoln, from 1948 to 50. She was a very beautiful woman. She had a natural instinct for publicity. She had a flair. She was a celebrity on the street, in the courts, especially, and in the press. And part of her mystique also involves her husband, Bill Davey, who was a burglar and gambler and had his own businesses along the street. He had what I think of as a miniature casino, the Key Club, 200 and a half 25th Street, across from the Rose Rooms. He had a number of state chartered clubs that dispensed illegal liquor. So between the two of them, maybe you could even call them 25th Street's power couple of the mid-20th century.
And you said famous on the street, in the courts, and in the press. She appeared in the courts maybe because of her activities?
Oh, yes. She was arrested rather often, whether for raids on the Rose Room or for selling narcotics. And that was something that was also going on in the street in those times. She had a local physician in Ogden who supplied her with those to sell. The Rose Rooms at 25th and Washington, 25th and Lincoln, operated from 1948 to 1950, and when that was finally closed down, there was never, as far as I could tell, another business in that on the second floor of that building until the current rooftop bar called Alleged, which was opened in the last year and has become probably become the hot spot on 25th Street. So if for those who are familiar with Alleged, if you go there, that is now that in the space where the Rose Rooms were. The Rose Rooms first blazed into public consciousness in 1948, and I like this story because it involves my dad, who was a member of a barbershop quartet from Weber State. The Weber Wildlife Federation had an annual jollification party. They held it at the Livestock Coliseum in Ogden. And they were accustomed always to having the grand finale as strippers. And so in 1948, here was this program, and Weber College had sent over its musical talent to entertain, but the stag-minded audience wanted nothing to do with it. So here were all these musicians from Weber State trying to perform, and the audience was hurling bottles on the stage, saying, bring on the girls. Well, the strippers this year had been furnished from the Rose Rooms, and beforehand, before the show, they had been circulating and passing out matchbooks, which had the Rose Rooms emblems, and the strippers had written their names in ink in the matchbooks. So the police hurried to the Livestock Coliseum and arrested not the bottle throwers, but the strippers. And this was the first time that the Rose Rooms had ever been in public consciousness. And immediately, their rooming house license was revoked by the city commission. That didn't stop them from continuing to operate for another 2 years. Now, why would law enforcement allow them to continue to operate, knowing full well that they were there? Well, Rosetta Davey and her husband were both valuable police informants. They knew the criminal community in Ogden very well, and they willingly passed on a lot of valuable information to the sheriff's department and the police department. That's probably how they were able to survive for 2 years before they were shut down for good.
Oh, fascinating. We're going to take another brief break. When we come back, more with Val Hawley's fascinating history of 25th Street in Ogden, which also becomes, colors Ogden's reputation with the rest of Utah and the world. Legends of corruption, menace, and depravity. The rest of Utah has tended to judge Ogden by 25th Street. And in present day, Ogden has embraced the afterglow of 25th Street's decadence, successfully promotes it to tourists, and of course it's a fascinating place at this point. When we come back, we'll have Val Hawley tell us about Mayor Harmon Ward Peary, Belle London, the most successful madam in Utah history, and other aspects of this history. We have a question from Steve in Arizona. We'll get to that following the break. More following the break.
Today's Access Utah episode was first broadcast in 2013.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah today. I'm Tom Williams. Generations of Ogdenites have grown up absorbing 25th Street's legends of corruption, menace, and depravity. And the rest of Utah has tended to judge Ogden, known in its first century as a gambling hell and tenderloin, and in recent years as a degraded skid row, by the street's gaudy reputation. And though the street has undergone a renaissance, and present-day Ogden embraces the afterglow of that decadent reputation, it has colored Ogden's reputation, and it plays a role in larger themes in Utah and U.S. history, most significantly Mormon-Gentile conflict. It was also targeted in statewide Progressive-era reform efforts, and had come to epitomize the futility of liquor abatement programs. We're going to learn about a couple of other fascinating figures from this history, Mayor Harmon Ward Peary and Belle London, the most successful madam in Utah history. Val Hawley is with us. He's a native of Weber County, attended Weber State College, received a degree in journalism from BYU, a law degree from University of Utah, master's in library science from Catholic University of America, and for some time he's been a law librarian and independent historian in Washington, D.C. He's the author of James Dean, the biography, and Mike Connolly and the Manly Art of Hollywood Gossip, in addition to this book, 25th Street Confidential. Let's start to this last segment of the program. By the way, we have another about 10 minutes left in the program. This is what Steve, his question via email. Do trains no longer come through Ogden? If not, how long has it been since the last train came through town? And to where has the railroad line been rerouted and why?
The railroad now bypasses Ogden. It goes through Salt Lake instead. Railroad passenger service started to decline greatly in the 60s. And I think, I'm a little fuzzy on this, I think the last passenger train came through in the early 80s when Amtrak replaced the service. Even that doesn't come through now. The trains bypass Ogden and have the servicing done in Salt Lake.
When did this, I guess, the height of this era, you call it decadence, start to taper off?
I would say in the 50s. At that time, as I said, the railroad passenger service started to taper off at that time. And also, the trains were not disgorging as many people onto the street. Also, the Sheriff's Department of Weber County in the 50s raided a lot of the businesses and closed them down for good.
We have this brief comment on our Facebook page from Larry Jensen, referring to the photo looking down 25th Street. I assume he says that's a classic photo. Val Hawley, maybe talk about that a little bit.
That photo on the page seems to have been taken from the it was taken from Union Station looking east. It seems to have been taken in the 20s. And at that time, all of the best buildings from the in the commercial style from that era were still standing and intact. You had a lot of three-story hotels. You had at the end of the street where it intersects Washington Boulevard, the Grand Broom Hotel, and the Reed Hotel, kitty corner from that. And you also had the wonderful old Model T's parked diagonally on both sides of the street. You had streetcar lines. So all of what you see in the photo illustrates the enormous amount of business that was transacted there every day.
Yeah, that is a classic photo. By the way, how many of the original buildings are there? If I were to go to 25th Street today and take your book along with me, how many of these places would I be able to look at?
As I recall, there are about 41 or 42 still there, and these were all carefully documented in a report put together by Alan Roberts, who I mentioned in the last segment, who was with the Utah Historical Society, a very talented architect. These were included on the form which nominated the street for the National Register of Historic Places. That's now called the Lower 25th Street Historic District.
You begin your chapter on the Renaissance with an interesting quote. I'll just quote this. One of the most cynical cliches in architecture is that poverty is good for preservation. The poor don't bulldoze historic neighborhoods to make way for fancy new high-rises.
That's correct, and that's why, that's principally why these buildings have survived, because when the street was so dilapidated, it was not desirable, and no one wanted to go in there and tear the buildings down and put up new ones, because at that time, certainly no one would have come.
The reputation that I remember, coming to, never lived in Ogden, but coming to Cache Valley, was of 25th Street as a degraded skid row, because there was a period where it had that reputation. How bad did it get?
It got pretty bad. There were two liquor stores on the street in the 60s. There was the Salvation Army, and just a lot of drifters, alcohol addicted, unfortunate people found their way there and could either squat in abandoned buildings or have an existence in flop houses, which were inside the dilapidated hotels all along the street. Also, there were a number of restaurants that were very kind to these people and would feed them for free and cash what few checks they had. So it seems like it was a naturally occurring place for these people to live.
Before we conclude, we have about 7 minutes left. I want to have you tell me about two of the very fascinating, there are many fascinating characters, but in your book, Belle London, the most successful madam in Utah history. Tell me a bit about her.
Yes, Belle London was there from 1889 to 1914, and she was a very smart woman. She was an excellent businesswoman. She had any number of brothels on 25th Street. The most famous one was her grand parlor house in Electric Alley, which was an alleyway between 25th and 24th Streets. I call her the most successful madam in Utah history because when Salt Lake in 1908 decided to have to create a regulated prostitution district in Salt Lake, which is now about where Central Station of the Front Runner is, they recruited not any of the famous madams of Salt Lake, but they got Belle London to come down from Ogden to create and organize and manage it.
Interesting.
She had the reputation of running politics in Ogden, and she probably did because of her wealth and of all the incriminating information that she possessed. There was a time in the Utah State Legislature, down in the state capitol in about 1912, where there was actually a debate on the House floor as to whether Belle London ran politics in Ogden.
A debate on the House floor?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's in the book.
Yeah. Tell me about Harmon Ward Peary. He was a mayor for a time.
Harmon Ward Peary was a mayor off and on between 1934 and 1949. when I was growing up, there were all sorts of stories about this Mayor Peary. And once again, we're going back to the what was said at the beginning of the program about the historical viewpoint languishing while the mythology is self-perpetuating. Everyone was convinced that Harmon Peary became rich by pocketing money, fees and fines from all the gambling establishments and the slot machine purveyors that were in town. But the truth turned out to be that Harmon Peary was, he had his own money. He, even his political enemies, more than once, went on the record to say that he never profited personally from fees and fines from gambling establishments. What he did was keep taxes low, which is why especially the large railroad employee community in Ogden kept electing him as mayor. But his opponents, and there were a lot of those, including the editor of the Standard Examiner, were just always thinking that Harmon Peary was responsible for 25th Street's bad reputation, and that was what everyone else judged Ogden by. Harmon Peary's slogan was money going into the city treasury, which belongs there. But the Standard Examiner retorted that that means that Peary, who was he was a wealthy tavern keeper, can pile up more gains when he, as mayor, authorizes himself to load his tavern with slot machines. The Standard Examiner was afraid that as long as Harmon Peary was mayor, 25th Street would continue to be the trademark by which the entire city was judged.
I imagine there would have been periodic efforts, you made a little bit of reference to this earlier, to clean up the street.
Yes, there were. In 1913, people were horrified by how it looked. It wasn't necessarily that that it was a well, at that time it was a bustling business, but there were worm-eaten trolley electric poles in the middle of the street, and some of the buildings had never been painted. And so there was a campaign right before World War I to clean it up and spruce it up and even change its name so it would no longer be called 25th Street. Ironically, in the 70s, when the mayor and city council started to create programs to restore 25th Street, they said they want to restore it. They said they wanted to restore it to its pre-World War I appearance, quite unaware that at the same period, people were quite unhappy with how it looked. There was also an effort in the 1930s to change the name of 25th Street. They felt that it had become so, the reputation had become so bad that if they changed its name, and some of the candidates for the new name were Roosevelt Way or American Way, so you had petitions going up one side of the street asking people to sign to change the name, and petitions on the other side of the street where people were being asked to sign to keep the name, and eventually the name 25th Street won out.
And I imagine city fathers are very happy about that today.
Oh, they are.
They are. Has a brand.
I think 25th Street is now a tourist attraction, and people want to come and see if it was that bad, how it got that way.
Just have a couple minutes left. I wonder, having dived into this story, what you come away with, your biggest impression here, or biggest surprise, perhaps?
Oh, the biggest surprise is how well documented all this is in the archives at Weber State University and at the Marriott Library at the University of Utah. There is tons of material about this, whether correspondence or files detailing, for example, how much property Bell London owned on the street. It's very well documented, so there's no need to rely on the mythology. You can go and find out the facts for yourself.
I wonder, do you run into anybody from Utah, Ogden, out there in D.C.? Do you run into any of these stories there?
Oh, it's been so long ago now since the street was really notorious that no, I'm afraid I haven't personally run into anyone in Washington who talks about it. But not so long ago, as you mentioned earlier, when Tom Owens, an Ogdenite, was in the Army in the 60s, at that time, a lot of the old soldiers who were still in the Army remembered very well 25th Street and its racy activities during World War II.
Well, it's a fascinating book, and listeners can find out much more about the history. It's called 25th Street Confidential, Drama, Decadence, and Dissipation Along Ogden's Rowdiest Road, out from University of Utah Press. Val Holly is the author. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. I'm very glad to be here.
It's time again for Utah StoryCorps, everyday people sharing their stories at the StoryCorps recording booth in St. George.
I'm Pete.
My name is Judith, and I am Pete's co-parent. We moved here together in 2016 when our kiddo was 6 months old.
I'm just very proud that we moved with so few things.
Yeah.
I saw the picture the other day.
And it was taken, I think, in
Minneapolis, right before we went through big doors that are like, now you're officially in America. A little six-month-old baby Felix strapped to you and a couple of suitcases and a backpack.
And one of the suitcases was carrying all my academic papers. So do you remember coming here and deciding to navigate life by bike?
I had been very selective about towns that I lived in America for their specific bike friendliness. And I had a job in the outdoor industry and taking people out on tours. But it was different with a kid and more complicated.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of staying here was Felix, because at first we found a really nice daycare for him that we loved. Then we moved downtown because we wanted to be in an area that is walkable and bikeable, and we could take him to school with a cargo bike.
And now we probably talk about leaving every few months, right?
We do, but at the same time, staying here was me starting to work with the St. George Bicycle Collective. And then I just really realized that something that I've always done in Northern Germany by default, which is riding my bike, is so vital. We were giving people bikes who don't have transportation and who couldn't get to their jobs or services. And I realized how important mobility is and how important transportation planning is for communities.
I was just angry about areas that were just built around vehicles instead of humans. I just saw it as like this massive tragedy from a quality of life standpoint, and then also from a carbon emission standpoint. So I've switched into the solar industry, and as other countries industrialize, that they're seeing this model for having prosperity
while using renewable energies.
Yeah. So the entire economy here is building around vehicles, and the vehicles keep getting bigger. So the houses have to keep getting bigger, and the driveway ways get bigger and the garages get bigger and they're more spread out, that there isn't a way to continue building and continue that boom without just mowing down the desert.
Right. We came here because the desert is so beautiful, and then seeing all that beauty, how it gets developed. Fast forward, we're co-living and co-parenting in St. George, Utah. Phoenix is a very, very thoughtful and sensitive child, and you know, we raised him biking him everywhere. He experienced his environment on the back of our cargo bike or walking, and there's such a different way of experiencing your environment at walking or bike speed. So my hope is that that shaped him in ways that he's curious about his environment, not fearful.
David Wallace Wells has this quote, degrees of warming are like cancer diagnoses. Regardless, it's going to be bad. It's actually hopeless, but that's okay. And it doesn't mean that you shouldn't do your best in a hopeless situation.
That's it.
And how can I look my kid in the eyes in 20 years?
We were doing our best. The work is never done. It really isn't. It's not about solutions. We will always do this work, and we'll always have to do this work, and that's okay. That's humanity.
Support for StoryCorps on Utah Public Radio comes from Alta Bank, Zion Canyon Mesa, and the City of St. George.